soon. And many physicists, including myself, thought that it's time to start thinking about the LHC. So I, for example, used to work more on string theory and decided to switch my attention to the LHC. And the first question we ask ourselves as physicists, we do not proceed without prejudice, of course, what will the LHC find? So about a year before it starts working and giving us data, I think it's the time to place bets. And based on my study of the field, I'm ready to place my bet. I don't think physicists are smart enough, as smart as nature, so this will be something we haven't thought of. And this is, of course, very, very exciting. Unfortunately, I don't know how to work on none of the above. We have a list of options, so I decided to look at the options that have been put forward by various people. And among the suggestions that people suggested, among the proposals, supersymmetry is by far the most conservative and most conventional possibility for LHC physics. It's very concrete, and whenever people say it has some problems, it's only it has these problems because people can calculate. So this is a model which is very, very framework, which is very explicit, and we can calculate, and it does or does not work. All the other alternatives, and I'll make kind of a blanket statement here, don't even come close. When they don't face problems, it's because we don't know what to say, and we can't calculate. So let's focus on supersymmetry. And for that, we'll need to understand why supersymmetry is broken. And we had a wonderful overview by Nilis this morning, so I feel like I don't need to repeat that. We know supersymmetry should be broken, and depending on how supersymmetry is broken, we get different outcomes. This is closely related to topics which were mentioned by other speakers here, like dark matter and dark energy. Second, after supersymmetry is broken, which is a very interesting question how it happens, supersymmetry should be communicated to the MSSM, which is nothing but a copy of the standard model plus all its super partners. These mediation mechanisms are exciting and important because depending on how supersymmetry is broken and how this information is mediated to the observed world, we'll find parameters in the MSSM, these parameters that hopefully the LHC will measure. So the LHC will measure some parameters which are known as the soft breaking terms. These parameters depend crucially on how supersymmetry is broken and how the information is communicated. And a lot of the activity in supersymmetry model building is about these two questions. How can supersymmetry be broken? And how can we predict the soft terms? So this is a one slide summary of literally of the order of 10,000 papers of what is available up there in the market for supersymmetry breaking. So the general scheme is that we have the MSSM on this side. So this is the standard model and all its super partners. We have another sector of the theory which comes under the name of hidden sector, sequestered, or so forth, which breaks supersymmetry, and some interactions which couple the hidden sector to the visible sector, and that comes under the name of mediation. And very broadly speaking, there are two kinds of mediations that people discuss, depending on the kind of interaction or the scale of the interactions which mediate the breaking of supersymmetry to the observed world. And these are these two columns. There's a lot more in the literature about gravity mediation, where these interactions are not really gravitational interactions, but this coupling between the two sectors is by various operators which are Planck suppressed. It's fair to say that we know very, very little about these operators. They can be very complicated, and therefore the predictive power of this scheme is extremely limited. So as I say here, the coupling to the MSSM is through Planck suppressed operators. There's a very serious problem, phenomenological problem, with flavor-changing neutral currents. They are very tight bounds, experimental bounds, from accelerator physics, particle physics. So this is very challenging. Dark matter is very simple in this scheme. And something called mu-b-mu problem, which I will not review here, is also simple. The contender, which I find much more appealing, comes under the name of gauge mediation, where these interactions which couple the two sectors are ordinary gauge interactions gauge interactions of the standard model. So we don't need to invent new stuff. We just use the same gauge fields of the standard model. They couple to the various fermions that we know and love. So for example, photons, gluons, and so forth. And they also couple to the hidden sector. So the hidden sector also has particles which are charged under these gauge interactions. So for example, there could be electrically charged particles in the hidden sector. This does not sound like a very outrageous assumption. And if we do that, then the main experimental constraint, that of flavor-changing neutral current, automatically evaporates. And these currents, these dangerous processes, are naturally suppressed. Dark matter is a little bit more challenging here, and mu and b mu is also more challenging. So for the rest of the talk, I'll talk about gauge mediation. And I did a SPIRES check this morning of the number of citations to the original papers, and they were in the several thousands. So there's really huge literature out there, and we would like to summarize this whole literature in only a few slides. So, and that's what I'll be doing in the rest of the talk. And part of the goal of this talk is how to organize these thousands of papers in a more manageable way. And I'll say more about that later. I'm proceeding in an anti-historical order. In the mid-90s, there's a scheme which is in the name gauge mediation was invented. And that appeared with papers pioneering with the work of Dine and Nelson and following by others. I will be a little bit more technical in the coming slides, but bear with me. If you decouple toward the end, I'll come back and be general. So we have some theory which has some particles called messengers, denoted by phi here. They are in some real representations of the MSSM gauge group. For example, these are particles with charge 1 and another particle with charge minus 1, so they can couple to each other. In addition, there is a neutral particle, neutral field X, which gets an expectation value which breaks supersymmetry. So I'm not going to say here how this thing happens. So in this scheme, this quantum field X is treated classically. It gives masses to these particles, phi, which are not supersymmetric. So X couples somehow to the sector that breaks supersymmetry. The particles phi have non-supersymmetric masses. These particles can run in loops, and as they run in loop, they lead to supersymmetry breaking in the various gauge fields that couple to them, and I'll do that in more detail soon, and that will eventually couple to the standard model. So as I say here, the messenger spectrum is not supersymmetric, and they're coupling to the MSSM gauge fields, feeds to the breaking to the MSSM. More explicitly, we have diagrams like that. This is a gaugino, for instance. These are these messengers. They have a fermion and a boson. And here is the gaugino coming out. This gives mass to the gaugino, even though the gauge field itself remains massless. So this one-loop diagram leads to gaugino masses. Similarly, we can get scalar masses at two loops. So here is a scalar, say a superpartner of the electron, superpartner of the quark, etc. They couple to the gauge fields, and some loop of these messengers, or this way, give them masses. Now, the mass of the gaugino is some number that depends on the expectation value on the previous slide, times the fine structure constant alpha of the particular gauge group. So we have a label R, 1, 2, 3, which labels the U1, the SU2, and the SU3 parts of the standard model. So we have three different alphas in the standard model. And correspondingly, we have three kinds of gaugino's, roughly the Fortino, the Wino, and the Gluino. And they get masses which are proportional to their alpha. So there's clear ratio between gaugino masses. Squark masses arise at two loops, so superficially they are smaller. And furthermore, and that's why we have alpha square here. But since here we compute mass square and here we compute mass, the masses of the fermions are of the same order of magnitude as the masses of the gaugino's, also powered by alpha. So this scheme is extremely simple, very popular because everything is calculable. Therefore, everything is predictive. It's a little bit too predictive in the sense that the minimal version of the scheme is already ruled out, and one needs to be a little bit more sophisticated, and there are various variants of that, and that's what all these thousands of papers do. If we look back at this scheme, this is a summary of the properties of this scheme. The fermions and the Gugino masses are of the same order of magnitude. There is some scale in the problem denoted by F over M here, which is typically taken to be 10 TeV or so, such that the fermion and the Gugino masses are a factor of alpha smaller than that. Alpha is then a tenth or a hundredth. And that's the spectrum. And there's a long list of properties of this scheme. First of all, flavor universality. All the particles which have the same gauge quantum numbers have exactly the same mass. After all, they all get the mass through the coupling to the gauge fields. And the difference between the electron and the muon arises only at very high or at much higher order. And therefore, this electron and this muon have the same mass. This is good for this problem of level changing neutral currents. Second, let's compare particles which have color with particles which do not have color. The particles which have color have an alpha here, which is alpha of the strong interactions. The particles which don't have alpha, which don't carry color, do not have such a factor of alpha of the strong interaction, say only alpha of electromagnetism, which is smaller. Therefore, the colored guys are heavier than the uncolored ones. We also have relations between Gugino masses and fermion masses. Something a little bit more technical, there's some small A terms. It's a little bit hard to generate terms called mu. The gravitino is the LSP, a lightest supersymmetric particle. And the bino and the tau are the NLSP, the next to lightest supersymmetric partner. And that's very important for the phenomenology, for the discovery, and also for the astrophysics of these models. And there's a long list denoted by the ellipses here of other properties which are true in that scheme. The original idea of gauge mediation came actually in the very early 80s, 81 or so, 82, by this long list of people. They wrote a more explicit model in which the messengers participate in the supersymmetry breaking mechanism. And again, this is a little bit more technical. We have couplings of messengers to this X field. We also have a Y field. The derivative of this superpotential with respect to Y sets phi to zero, but that's inconsistent with the derivative of the superpotential with respect to X, and that's why supersymmetry is broken. If you didn't follow that, don't worry. The nice thing about this scheme, which was actually earlier, is that the messengers is not something that was an ad hoc addition to the model. It's not that we had this modular structure with a box that breaks supersymmetry, that couples to X, that couples to the messengers, which couples to gauge fields, which couples to the standard model, which looks a little bit artificial. But these models are more economical because the messengers participate in the supersymmetry breaking. Such models are known as direct mediation models. The next level in the evolution of this idea happened again in the mid-80s. It was suggested by Witten that what we should be looking for is a scheme called dynamical SUSY breaking, where the supersymmetry breaking is not put in by hand, but arises because a certain coupling constant is very small at short distance. It becomes larger at longer distance, very much like in QCD. When it becomes larger, we have a strongly coupled theory there, whose dynamics dynamically break supersymmetry. So we don't put supersymmetry in by hand, and the fact that supersymmetry is broken at low energies is automatic because of running of coupling constants. And I'm continuing with my historical review. The next thing on the agenda was, of course, to combine all these ideas, to make a model of dynamical supersymmetry breaking, combine it with direct mediation, such that we do not need these messengers. This looks very appealing. The messengers participate in the supersymmetry breaking, so we don't need to add these explicit messengers. And if this hidden sector is very strongly coupled, the whole idea of messengers might not even be well defined. Although this was very elegant, it immediately ran into a long list of phenomenological model building problems, which made it very hard, and this approach was not pursued. A few years ago, many of these difficulties have evaporated with the idea that we do not live in a stable vacuum, but instead we live in a metastable state, and the supersymmetry breaking happens in a metastable state. This is, of course, of a lot of interest for cosmologists, but since this is old work, I will not review it here. I would just say that many of the technical difficulties in constructing such models no longer exist, and it's a lot easier to build models now. So I'm finally ready to list the goals of this talk. So we have this idea in mind that we have something that breaks supersymmetry, and it couples to the gauge fields of the standard model. And through that, we communicate the information to the hidden sector, to the visible sector, to the standard model. And this scheme now looks very promising. There are tons of models in the literature that do that. And therefore, this is a good avenue to pursue. The first question we ask is, if this hidden sector is very strongly coupled, and we cannot use perturbation theory to compute the soft terms, how do we compute the predictions of such a theory if it's strongly coupled? This is question number one. Question number two, I said that there are thousands of papers in the literature. We would like some framework or some formalism or some language which unifies them all. How can we organize all these tens of, or thousands of models in some coherent fashion so that when we have data, we can compare it with, with these predictions? And finally, are there some general predictions of all these circle of ideas? Not of a specific model, but the whole circle of ideas. Can we come up with a prediction that if it is materialized at the LHC, then the idea of gauge mediation turns out to be on the right track? Or if conversely, the prediction is not verified by the LHC, then we'll know that the idea of gauge mediation is on the wrong track. It turns out that there are such predictions, and they are very general, and not only are they true in all the thousands of papers, they're also true in models that have not yet been written down. So the goal of the paper is to analyze that. And these are my collaborators. So first, let's review and give a precise definition of gauge mediation. So we have a sector that breaks supersymmetry. We'll refer to it as a hidden sector, and this is the MSSM. And MSSM gauge fields couple the two. Let us first turn off all the coupling constants in the MSSM, all the gauge coupling constants. So this is a theoretical idea. We turn off the coupling, in which case this sector and this one are completely decoupled. We have two decoupled sectors. In this sector, the MSSM doesn't know that supersymmetry is spontaneously broken. In the hidden sector, we can put all the information, all the particles that break supersymmetry, all the complicated dynamics which can be very strongly coupled. If there are messengers, we'll put them here. If there are no messengers, we don't have to worry about that. And whatever else is outside the MSSM, we'll just put in this hidden sector. Later, we'll turn on alpha again. We'll do that perturbatively and couple the two sectors. So we would like to find some general properties of this part of the theory without specifying what it is. So this is important if this sector is very strongly coupled and we don't know how to calculate. And even if we can calculate, we can say, what can we say without spelling out what this hidden sector is? Of course, experimentally, it will be very hard to get a handle on that sector, which is at very high energy. So how can we treat something that we don't really know? Well, in field theory, we know how to do that. And it turns out that there's quite a lot we can say about such a hidden sector. So recall, we have in mind now some theory that breaks supersymmetry. It's very strongly coupled, very complicated. And the question is, what can we say about it? Well, it's characterized by a scale M. At energies way above M, supersymmetry is unbroken. At energy M, supersymmetry is broken. So it is supersymmetric at shorter distances, not supersymmetric at longer distances. It has some global symmetry, which we'll denote by G, which we will later gauge and identify with the standard model. So for example, imagine this theory has an SU3 plus SU2 plus U1 gauge theory, which we will later gauge. So at the moment, this is just a global symmetry of this complicated theory. And when we turn on alpha, the coupling constant, the two sectors talk to each other, and the information about supersymmetry breaking is mediated to the visible sector. If we have conserved current, if we have global symmetry, there must be conserved currents. So it turns out that all the information we need out of this complicated hidden sector is summarized by a small list of correlation functions of these currents. And just using Lorentz invariance and dimensional analysis, we know quite a lot about these correlation functions. So let's assume for simplicity that the symmetry is just U1. Because of Noether's theorem, there must be a conserved current. And because of supersymmetry, this current must be in the supermultiplet. So again, the details are not important. For the expert, I would say that they appear in the superfield. We have a scalar, a fermion, a vector, and all the other components here are determined in terms of these. And this vector here is the ordinary Noether current, which occurs also in theories which have a global symmetry. We can use Lorentz invariance to control all the correlation functions of these currents. And it turns out that all of them are determined by four functions. So all we need to know are four functions of one variable. This is an enormous reduction in the information. We started from a strongly coupled quantum field theory, extremely complicated, that all the information that we need is summarized in these four functions. So that's the first reduction. If we integrate out the hidden sector and we couple it to the visible sector, we derive an effective Lagrangian for the visible sector fields. And again, I apologize for being a bit technical here. And these functions determine certain coupling constant renormalization in the visible sector. And the first thing we see is this B of P square generates a term like that. If we set P equals zero, then lambda, which is the Gaugino, becomes, this term becomes a Gaugino mass. So the Gaugino mass in the visible sector has a G squared, G is like the coupling constant, times this function at zero momentum. Four different one-loop diagrams determine the masses of the fermions, and they are all determined by such an integral. So we started with three functions of P square, C0, C a half, and C1. Doesn't matter for this talk what they are. But all the information that we really need is this linear combination of them integrated over P. So most of the information in the hidden sector is not really needed. This is very good news. We had a very strongly coupled theory, very complicated, but most of the information about it does not propagate to the soft breaking terms in the visible sector. So now let's do it in a little bit more realistically with the three couplings of the standard model, labeled by R equals 1, 2, and 3 for U1, SU2, and SU3. So the Gaugino masses depend on these three functions, one for SU1, one for SU2, one for SU3, evaluated zero momentum. The scalars are given by formula like that. For every one of these sectors, SU3, SU2, or U1, we need one real number, which is, again, this linear combination integrated over P. So we see that out of all the information of the hidden sector, again, this strongly coupled, complicated theory, what we need is a handful of numbers. Everything else does not affect the phenomenology. We get a formula like that for fermion masses. Altogether, there are five fermion masses that we are interested in. Quark doublets, anti-up, anti-D, lepton doublets, and right-handed neutrino. So these are five quark masses, and they are given as a function of three real numbers. So all the dependence of the hidden sector is in these three real numbers, A sub R. Five real numbers determined in terms of two, in terms of three real numbers, and therefore there must be two relations. This is the main result of this talk. So we had a hidden sector, it was very complicated, it has complicated dynamics. We coupled it to the visible sector using gauge fields. It was a little bit too technical, but the bottom line is that no matter what you do, and no matter how complicated the hidden sector is, such linear combination of fermion masses must be satisfied. So this is sum of the oldest fermions weighted by the hypercharge, or the sum of oldest fermions weighted by B minus L. So once these numbers are measured at the LHC, assuming supersymmetry is there, we just plug them here and see whether these predictions are true. Now, people had these predictions before. People noticed these sum rules, but nobody said that they are so general. they were always true, and I'm not going to argue with that. I'm saying that this is always true, so it's clear that every specific example that people constructed satisfies these relations. But the main point I'm stressing is that if these results are not true, it's not that take your favorite gauge mediation model and tweak it a little bit, you will make it work. You're not going to do that. So this is really a deciding factor. If these relations are right, then the idea of gauge mediation is right. Which one it is depends on more details. And if these are wrong, then the idea of gauge mediation is wrong and we should do something else. I'll skip the number of parameters and go to the conclusion section. We've exhibited a formalism for dealing with dynamical direct mediation models. We have a hidden sector which is very strongly coupled. It's coupled directly to the minimal, to the visible sector. And we've exhibited the formalism that if somebody hands you such a theory, we know how to compute now all the soft terms. And the more we compute, the better. It has some generic features. The fermions are degenerate. All the fermions with the same quantum numbers have the same mass. And this is essential in order to avoid the problem of flavor-changing neutral currents. We exhibited two mass relations of the fermions. They are always true. And then there are other things here which are more technical, which I did not discuss. There are small A terms, and mu and B mu are challenging. And the gravitino is the LSP. These results are always true in this huge class of models. Most of it has not even yet been explored. The rest of the list are specific to the minimal scheme, which is most popular. So when experimentalists make plots of what gauge mediation gives, they take the absolute minimum scheme, in which there are further relations between gaugino masses. I mentioned that the ratios between them are like the ratios between the three alphas, and Peter Nilles had the same relations this morning. There are relations between gauginos and fermions. There are large hierarchies between different fermions. I mentioned this. Colored ones are heavier than the uncolored one. In fact, this particular qualitative thing is what makes gauge mediation models most problematic. The fact that the colored guys have to be much heavier. But we see that this is specific to the examples that people examined, and it's not always true. And the Bino and the Stau are the NLSP. So what we see here is that what people call gauge mediation is a little bit ill-defined. What many people mean by gauge mediation is the minimal scheme, in which we have many more results. But there's a much larger class in which only these results are generic and the rest are not. So that opens the way for a lot of model building work, trying to explore what else can we say. So I think I'll stop here.
Some questions? Alex?
Why is it necessary for this hidden sector to be strongly coupled?
It's not. It could be either weakly coupled or strongly coupled. But strongly coupled is a little bit better if we want to explain why, where did the weak scale come from. So we can put it in by hand, and there would be a number, say, 1 TeV. This 1 TeV could arise entropically. It could arise all sorts of ways. But the most elegant way is that this scale comes automatically, the same way the QCD scale comes automatically. The QCD scale comes about, these a few hundred MeV, come about because coupling constant ground. We start with G, which is small, but not very small. And then we have e to the minus 1 over G square, which gives us the small ratio between, say, the QCD scale and the Planck scale. It would be extremely satisfactory if the same thing would be true for the weak scale or the supersymmetry breaking scale. If there's some coupling constant which runs, and when it becomes strongly coupled, it produces that. And this idea might seem far-fetched, but by now the technology is such that we can calculate such things. And there are examples of models that are strongly coupled, calculable, and break supersymmetry in precisely this form.
I was wondering whether you have a preferred range for the gravitino mass. You were mentioning that dark matter is challenging in those models. However, I think if you have a gravitino mass above 100 eV, you can have the gravitino as a perfectly fine dark matter candidate. You might even solve small-scale structure problems with the Stau NLSP. You could even have fantastic signatures at a collider. You could have a stable-looking particle, and all these cascades that you want to analyze at the LHC will be much easier to analyze than with the Beano LSP, or with the Neutralino LSP.
I thank you for your comment. You know about this subject much more than I do, so I should not answer this question.
More?
There was a question also. No, a CP violation is a potential problem. I don't know what to say, what's problem and what's not. We explore what the theory gives us, and whatever the theory gives us is either good or bad. There can be CP violation. In supersymmetric theories in general, there's a CP problem, and this is not specific to one scheme or another. In this scheme, in the minimal gauge mediation scheme, the CP problem is not as severe as in the rest. I should stress that all that should be contrasted with an other column of gravity mediation in which nothing is calculable, the parameters are completely random, and when people say, oh, we don't have CP violation, of course not, because you didn't calculate it. So when we say that here we know and it's tight, but it's not devastating, we do have this CP problem. The general scheme that I have has more phases, and therefore more CP violation than the minimal scheme. But that's because I didn't tell you what the model is. We should use that as a clue to constrain the allowed model. So here the view was, what is the most general thing we could do? And the surprise is that even though it's the most general scheme, it still has predictions, these two sum rules. Now we can try and be more specific and ask what subset of these are consistent with knowledge of CP violation. That's something I'm working on. There was one more question here. Okay.
In the interest of time, we're going to have to move on. So let's thank Nathan again. And